First of all, today is Sunday, October 11th, 2015. To me, it's hard to say 2015. I remember 1915. I have stories out of 1915 are more real to me than 2015, but it is 2015. I want to say hello to the lovely students sitting in front of me. Moshe, I hope you're not running out. We keep see to it that there's a minion in this room when I finish. It's a minion to daven to Ribbono Shel Olam, a minion of chesed for rakefet and snow, that we don't have to start going out late at night at our age. Two, I want to say hello and wish a good year to all those listening. And again, I thank you. It's very moving to me. Wherever I was on Sukkot, people came over to me, memach for me, aganze getcha. I will not translate that. I apologize, Simon. I don't even know how to translate it, Simon, so forget it. They make out of me a couple of Rav and our Rebbe, and I don't know what goes on, but thank God so many people listen, so my words of Torah reverberate. And I say hello to you too, and I bow my head before you in all humility. Now, in relation to the first of all, I want to dedicate this year with all the tragedy going on, and it's very close to home. The Henkin young man was born in my building. None of the people, you know, there are very few old timers left from the original tenants of the original people who owned the apartments in the building, 69. But when his parents relocated from Beit Shan to Yerushalayim before they went to Kiryat Moshe, they rented in my building. And if you'll ask, how can you rent in Berlin 18? There's one apartment with a hegdish. You know what a hegdish means? A man on the Upper West Side who made a lot of money. I never met him. And he never married, had no children. And he decided to retire in his 60s and bought the apartment in Berlin 18 and furnished it. And right before he was supposed to come, he died. He willed the apartment to Yeshivat Chevron. So that apartment has been rented. For many years, I had a Gadol B'Yisrael, Rabbi Yalev Krusnes, Seyfe Tzadik Levracha, the Lev Aryeh, who Reb Moshe gives more titles to than anyone else that he writes to, was my neighbor, the Lev Aryeh, from London, the Achbeitin from London. Sure, Rabbi Yalev Krusnes, I used to speak with him of learning. I used to... He was a cultured gentleman, you know. Besides being an Adam Gadol, he spoke the king's English. He was the queen's English, I should say. And he was a very interesting gentleman, a real family of B'nai Torah all over the world. The grossnesses, as in South Africa, Israel. But I want to dedicate this year to someone whose death got lost in all the difficulty we have, and no one, I was ashamed to see in Torah tidbits, a little advertisements, that's all they had to say about him. Rabbi Reuven Eberman, who died, I believe it was the Thursday before Sukkot, I know I was so busy with family matters, I fell over the threshold 2 hours before Shiva ended, on Erev Sukkot, Lenachem Mavel, and I told his widow, Chayaleya Hagla Eberman, who I yet know from B'nai Akiva, I said, Ruby, his name was Reuven Eberman, I said, your husband is responsible for my remaining normal. And I, if you know what I'm saying, that says it all. Ruby, I taught with him in three different schools. In YU, when Mustadimus died, Mustadimus ran the yeshiva, the position that Rabbi Penach has today, Rabbi Chalap had. When Mr. Abrams died, Rabbi Eichmann, who already had gone on Aliyah, he was a Ram in Kerem Biavna. He came to America to get a doctorate because in Israel, Ashrei Misha Bola Kan V'Talmudo B'Yado, the Gemara in Baba Batra, and Rakefet translates it, Ashrei Misha Bola Kan, and has degrees. The more degrees you have, the more you get paid. So he went back to America to get a doctorate, and Bernard Revel and Rabbi Belkin asked him to take over the yeshivas. So I taught with him in YU. I taught with him in Michlala. And when I left Michlala, a year later, he left, and I brought him into Midrashet Moriah, where I taught for 15 years. You follow me, Rafi? So Rabbi Eichmann and I interacted many, many different times. And I have to tell you, he was an Adam Gadol. He was a Posek Mufak. He was a Talmud Chacham. He was one of the finest graduates I ever met from Skokie. He was a Chicagoan. And what was amazing about him, and this is a challenge we all faced back in the 60s, the 70s, you don't have this challenge as much today, because today when you come in Aliyah, there's a whole Anglo world here. But when I came in Aliyah, I was coming from one culture to a totally different culture, and how do I find myself? And in addition to what I write about in Washington, and I don't want to say something that Nathan Cohn doesn't know already, but there was another aspect to life here, and that was when Ruby came back to Israel about 2 years after I came in Aliyah, he never altered, he never changed. He remained the same Rabbi Averman from Chicago. He didn't let the Frumkeit affect him, he didn't let the Kalatat affect him, he remained someone I could so fully identify with. He had an interesting sense of humor, and at one time when I was teaching, when I was a kid and I had endless energy and I had to make a living, I was teaching many, many hours a week. I was teaching like 500 students in Mechalar, the Israeli program, the American program, BMT, Machon Gold, and the Kollel. So I would know the names of every last student, which wasn't easy. And Ruby taught in the Chala, and each girl, let's say her name was Te'ena Rakefet. She, my eldest daughter, so in Ruby's class, she was T.R. You follow? He would call them by their initials, and he would memorize the initials of all the girls. So the girls called him R.A. R.A., you could interpret either Ruby Aberman or Rabbi Aberman, but either way, it went well. And I just felt such a loss, and I feel so lonely, because I have to be honest with you, who could I talk with? Who could I feel we understand each other inside out? Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and Ruby Aberman, these were the two people that I could talk with, as easy as can be. All right, time is much done, and I have to admit, I have to talk with Reb David Miller, Reb Asaf Bednash, my Talmud, Danny Mann, that's who I have up with today. But Reb Aaron is gone and Ruby is gone, but the Rebbeinu Shlomo of strength, we have to go further. Now, Yehei Zichro Baruch, he was a fabulous, fabulous individual. His own son, Moshe, was a Talmud in this Kollel, married as well to a Talmud Davman. One correction I want to make, I forget in which class it came up, but I spoke about Rabbi Yitzchak Kozlovsky, always in the other Monday class, as being the individual who attacked Reb Moshe. How do you let your son go to Berlin? And I said that Reb Yitzchak Kozlovsky was the nephew of Reb Chaim Isaac Reshensky. He was the brother-in-law of Reb Chaim Isaac Reshensky. And I thank Bram Wax of South Africa for calling my attention to it. I actually checked it out, and you're absolutely correct. And it was a niece of Reb Chaim Isaac, a daughter of Reb Yitzchak Kozlovsky, who married Reb Nissim Shulman in my time. And I remember the big simcha in YU, that the Rav, one of the Rav's top Talmidim, is marrying a niece of one of the people the Rav so greatly admired, Reb Chaim Isaac Reshensky. Coming back to the press conference, I just want to say a word or two, because I got comments from all over. And in relation to, the last time I'll talk about it, it just bothers me to mouth these words. In relation to homosexuality, I mentioned that people could get help. So a dear Talmud said to me that if you say things like that, people are going to be turned off, because nowadays they feel it's criminal to tell them to get help. So I want to tell you from my own experience. I mentioned I had 4 students that had a problem. 3.5 were solved. 2 of the cases I know intimately. They went to psychologists, and I even know how the psychologists helped them. And I saw these cases solved before my eyes. So I don't want anyone to tell me that people can't get help. And this is the tragedy of making it normative. And in my humble opinion, it is 1,000,000,000% forbidden. It is a toiva. It is the destruction of the human race. If someone is born with those tendencies and he can't overcome them, write a rachmanis on him. You don't spit in his face, chas v'chalila. He's no different than a machalos Shabbos, as Rabbi Lichtenstein said. As others have said, he's no different than anyone else. But you can't come along and say Chilul Shabbos is permissible and what the Torah calls a toiva is permissible.
But this is even also for Gentiles.
And it is what I said. You can't live in America. It's part of the Sheva Mitzvah. Look into the Gemara in Chulin. That's something better. I don't have to go any further than that. Quote from Lahim Ketuvah. It's sickening. It's frightening that the modern world, the Western world, there is no religion whatsoever. I have a survey done with Catholics in America, and they're mamash reformed today. These are believing Catholics who are happy the Pope is permitting this and permitting that. It's overwhelming. I wouldn't bet on the Catholic Church surviving the next millennium. Now, as far as the Batei Dinim for Geirut, I have to acknowledge my dear student, Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein, who knows a lot more about the rabbinate here because he's involved with it. And Yehoshua told me, and rightfully so, that I may be right or wrong as far as all Geirut that involves people living in Israel or coming to Israel to go through the rabbinate. And we spoke about that. And a lot of people, I met a lot of people over Sukkot who had heard the shir via the internet, and they said, well, that's exactly a good point of view. You can't work outside the system, or once you destroy it, you're never going to be able to rebuild it. So Yehoshua said to me, and I'll accept it 100%, that we need some Batei Dinim. And he says, there's one in Bnei Brak, Rav Kanievsky's Beit Din, there's one in Alon Shvut, not for Israelis. You need these Batei Dinim for people living in South Africa, living in America, living in South America, living elsewhere, and they want to convert. And their local rabbi send them to Israel to convert with a recognized Beis Din. Now, the Beis Din of the State of Israel will not handle these cases because these are not Israelis. But if Alon Shvut handles it, you will have a very good conversion which will be accepted when they go back to their homes. I hope that a temporary, then there'll be a question with the rabbinate here. Okay.
Are you saying only with places that don't have like a, not like America, or you're saying
No. These are the places that don't have, period. Secondly, a local rabbi, if you send someone to Israel to convert, it's a sign that their Jewishness is real, that they're really interested in joining. It's a psychological battle here. When I was rabbi in New Jersey, I had to convert. In Philadelphia, I had conversion problems. Jersey, conversion problems. Believe me, if I would have had the concept then, yeah, you want to convert, you're for real, you have to go to Israel for a year, and I'm going to give you a letter to Rabbi Rosen, the Arbeitin in Alon Shvut, and his Beitin will guide you and convert you. You follow me?
Some people can't.
I understand. What we're talking with is the luxury that they can do it, and that's why you need such Batei Dinim. And let me tell you, my Talmud is right. And Rabbi Kanievsky's based there. Now, I know cases. I once met the Rabbi Finkelstein standing on the corner of Keren HaYisod, and right near King George, and right near Agron. And he was hysterical. Why? He had a case of a lady who had come in Aliyah, who had been converted before by Rabbi Kanievsky's Beis Din in Bnei Brak, and the rabbinate didn't want to accept it. I had a case of a lady, a wonderful, wonderful lady, whose mother, and she converted on that Beis Din. She was a Katanite. I can't go into the details. They lived in Bnei Brak. She went to Beis Yaakov. Then she winds up in America, and she gets married, and this girl did not have an easy life. And I cannot praise her enough, such a decent, upright, ethical, moral human being. And she marries, and she has children, and they came in Aliyah last summer to Ashkelon, in the middle of the rockets and the shooting and everything going on. And she had a problem getting recognized. because she went to Rav Kanievsky, converted her. So I wrote a letter, and in the letter, my Yetzirah got the best of me. I said, I don't believe that Beit Yaakov and Bnei Brak teaches shiksas. You follow me? So finally, the Mishrat HaPnim recognized it on the basis that she had lived here and had citizenship, was considered Jewish many, many years ago. All right, now let's come back here. We're now in the world of Rebbe. It's going to be a very fascinating shiur today, and you'll see what I'm going to open your minds to. But let's begin at the beginning. We're going into the world of Rebbe Menashe Klein. As many of you know, Rebbe Menashe Klein was on one hand an Adam Gadol, a tremendous Lamdan. On the other hand, he was unique. You might want to call him idiosyncratic. He didn't walk the beaten path. A London Mufok who had Hasidic overtones, who was open-minded and closed-minded at the same time, and responded to every question he ever got, and could be friendly with Sapna people and YU people. And his best friend in life was Eli Wiesel. I don't have to go further. And we spoke of it down in great depth, and I gave you the sources, and I quoted, it's not just Rav Menashe Klein speaking, it's Eli Wiesel speaking. Now, then we went into the first year, we spoke about mikveh, something that we Litvakin do not take seriously. Mikveh is for women. We'll come back to this a little bit. That'll reflect in tomorrow's shir as well. Litvak, plight for Litvak. And as I told you, the Rav, and you can hear it on tape, on the tapes of Moriah, if they ever become public, which maybe in 100 years will be the case. So 100 years from now, you'll hear the Rav on tape, where the Rav says, when will the next shir be? Oh yeah, you'll be very busy. Right? You know, the Rav was like lording it over the Hasidim in the audience. On the other hand, you know very well that Hasidim, Alex, I saw Alex Friday morning, and I saw him a few weeks ago going to mikveh, remember? And Chassid takes it very seriously. And when some of you may know, and I don't know if you were here the other day, what was it, Thursday, I don't remember, Wednesday, 2 hours I was interviewed by a Lubavitcher. I can't take any more interviews. I'm telling Lubavitcher, I've now given 2 big interviews, and I don't have the energy for it. But in English, I don't know what's happening. I have no idea what's happening. I know what happened with the first interview was already with their big website. This already was an individual. I'll quote from his books, you'll see. So a nice guy. So I just want to say, when I took him, I said, look, I'll give you a lift back to civilization. So we walked to my car, Machon Lev, and I'm telling him Machon Lev, showing him, telling him what this is. I'm telling him, and in that building over there, there's a beautiful mikveh. So he looked at me. I said, what are you talking? There are hundreds of Hasidim go to Machon Lev. Those who dorm need a mikveh every morning. You're aware that there's a mikveh in Machon Lev. Yeah, you know. So mikveh becomes very important. So we went into a whole discussion of the question of mikveh, and what does mikveh mean, and takana of Ezra, and it was too hot for the tzibur. We went into a discussion of shemen nachri vis-a-vis yayin nachri. So it winds up halacha lemaisa that chassidim, particularly chabad, every day to go to mikveh. They have the attitude that if takana to Ezra was too hard for all the other Jews, we're big enough to live with Takanit Ezra. Now, and I explained to you when you saw in the tshuva that with Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, that is so fascinating to me, because I grew up, remember, I learned in Lakewood, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was Rabbi Aaron Cutler's father-in-law, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. Then I came to Israel, and Rabbi Huda Amital, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's grandson-in-law, and Professor Meltzer, and Rav Meltzer, they were, the Meltzer family. So to me, it's very real, and the importance of mikveh, the beauty of mikveh. So I got a lot of comments with more and more sources for why mikveh is so important. So I'll comment on this one last. My Talmid, David Yehuda Weissman, who studied here in this kollel, he has a kollel today, I believe it's in Beitar Elita, if I'm not mistaken. He's the Rosh Kollel. So he sent me an article from Chaim Kanievsky Shlita. That's from Bnei Brak, maybe the Gadol Hadon Bnei Brak with Rabbi Steinman, and he's a Litvak. I just want to tell Rabbi Weissman, you think he's a Litvak. Times are changing today. I saw pictures of him giving out Shirayim, let me pronounce it right, giving up Shirayim and having a Fabrengen. So I don't know, there may be no Litvakin left as the world in which I live. Could be Yitzhak, we're finished, but all right, there are better things in life. So in his writings, in Archot Yosha on Tahara, he gives a whole discourse of why going to mikveh every day is important. And the essence of it, the tahara aspect, that when a person goes to mikveh, it's not just halachically that it permits a woman to her husband. No, it's that even though there's no longer a takanet Ezra, but the tahara aspect still remains. It purifies you. And he brings down sources that there were yeshivot in Bavel who claimed that there was never a formal annulment of the takana. And therefore, someone who really wants to live b'kedusha b'tara should go to mikveh every day. Now, a Lubavitcher, Mordechai Lightstone, sent me a source, and a very, very powerful source from the Likutei Torah. This is the Likutei Torah of Shneur Zalman, of the Alter Rebbe, of the Baal Tanya, of the Rav, as they call him. This is the Likutei Torah, if you're familiar with the two volumes called the Rav, the World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Rafi, are you familiar with them or not? Who did I write them for? Oh my God, you don't know how hard I worked and how little, what's the difference? You don't know, that volume represents Hashkacha Gluya, how a man, a bus of a dumb, a Yankee fan, when they ligging in dread jets, and a Yankee fan could put together, that's, you got to read the introduction. Baruch Hashem. Anyway, the Rav was inanimate of Likutei Torah. And this is what he wanted to institute in Boston on the campus, 68, I believe it was 69, when he was teaching the Talmidim that came up from New York to keep him company. He shouldn't be lonely. His wife had died. And when he was teaching Torah Simon, he became a different person. You follow? And the Rav wanted to introduce Likutei Torah, varimim up the hearts, to warm up the heart of an American kid, to know what Rosh Hashanah is, what Yechodesh Elul is. It was the Maimanila Dodi V'Dodi Li that the Rav wanted to institute. And Rav Menachem Ginek, the Tsar of Kashrut, led the revolt. And you can read in the Rav. I tell you his name. Nothing to be ashamed of.
In the world, in the Rav.
I quote him. I give you my description of it as the world understood it, and then I quote him to show you our descriptions are basically the same. And he's the guy. The Rav chopped off his head, but the Rav desisted from teaching Likutei Torah. But here, no one is going to stop me. I'm quoting from Likutei Torah. It's in Likutei Torah, Pashat Ki Tavon, page Mem Gimel Amid Aleph, Sif Gimel Lamata. And the Likutei Torah talks about the importance of tefillah. And he says, regardless of the halachic circumstances today, whether it obligates or doesn't obligate it. But one thing is for sure, when someone goes to mikveh before they daven, their whole davening is different. Shaladivrei hakol mekubelet yoter hatfilah im hatfilah. So you see, we cannot be mezalzel in mikveh. and you see Reb Chaim Kanievsky, the Alter Rebbe, and who can do better? It dawned upon me, just quote one quote, the last Perek Chet, Masechet Yuma, the last Mishnah, Amar Rebbe Akiva, Ashreichim Yisrael, Lifnei Mi Atem Metaharin, Mi Metaheretchem, Avichem Sheba Shemayim, Sheneema V'zarakti Aleichem Mayim Tahorim, Utahatem. V'yomer Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, Ma Mikveh Metaheret HaTameim, Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metaher Et Yisrael. So you don't need anything else. The last Mishnah in Yoma, so powerful, so moving, so important.
Yes, you don't go to mikveh each morning.
What mikveh can accomplish.
So all these sources are really
I don't go to mikveh each morning, that is correct. I don't put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. But I will never be mezalzel, a chassid who goes to mikveh. And you can understand the importance that even among the Tvachim today, some go every Erev Shabbos, some go every, if they don't go Erev Shabbos, Erev Rekel, they go Erev Regalim, and the Kalim B'dat go at least Erev Rosh Hashanah and Erev Yom Kippur. But Chas V'Chalila L'Zalzel. And finally, a very interesting comment, well, I'm going to add a comment that has a lot to do with what's going on in our world. Again, a dear student, Rabbi Moshe Erlbaum, who lives in Kew Gardens Hills and is a Rebbe for 20 years already, I believe. He's my student also in the Kollel, he and his brother. So Moshe wrote to me that I heard from a Rebbe of mine in Mitnaget that the Hasidic minhag to go to mikveh every day is actually against the intent of Ezra. Ezra meant to discourage husbands from being with their wives like a rooster. The Gemara in Bracha. Mikveh for Baal Keri would limit relations because of the tircha and embarrassment if it was too frequent. By establishing mikveh every day, a chassid is not discouraged, but encouraged, since he must go anyway, and everybody must go regardless of whether he is a Baal Keri or not. And so, you see, I don't agree with that Rebbe's interpretation, but I absolutely think that interpretation is the interpretation for our generation. What am I saying? Okay? Let me analyze it. Takes 1 second. What the Gemara meant, and this is the simple pshat, was that if a person would only go to mikveh when he was a Baal Keri, everyone would laugh at him. So, to avoid the problem, you go to mikveh every day, and that way, kidei lo lahafkin. Fine. But it doesn't mean, according to what I understand, the Gemara still doesn't mean that you should live with your wife like a rooster. But his Rebbe is right. Nowadays, we should encourage a couple to live together all the more. And I'm going to be very brief because I don't like it. Sneas doesn't allow me to talk too much about this topic, but I did lecture on it in the Kollel an entire year, a number of years ago, in the Monday class. We're living at a time of sexual depravity. We're living at a time where every person in the Western world, his only values are wine, women, and song. I need not tell you the leaders of France, the leaders of America, it's beyond comprehension. If you would know the inside story with Clinton and why he gave certain pardons to certain people, and I happen to know the inside story, you would just be flabbergasted. But was Rebbe right? Was the Rav right? Every few years in YU, there was a big rebellion. Donnie Kaplan, what's your name?
Gideon Hershanger.
Wait 1 second. Let me go through the names. 1 second. Yomo Moshe Hurd is not here. Nathan Cohen, Dick Snow, Ruby Maltz, Yitz Rubin, Steve Breslau, Alex Glassman, Simon. Montague. Right, so it's three syllables. Montague. I've seen the name 1,000 times. It's a very prominent family. but I never had to pronounce it. So my apologies. Avraham Rachamim. Okay, Yeshaya Zimmerman is not here. Moshe Schwartz is not here. I don't. Danny Kaplan. Aaron Cheniak is that. So Rafi Klein. Okay. Are you in this class? Are you going to come back next week?
I'm going to come back, yeah.
Okay. Then you're welcome with open arms. Name.
Sure,
name.
Gidi Hirschender, G-I-D-D-Y.
G-I-D-D-Y. Gidi. Is it Gideon?
As in Gidon.
Gidon.
I'm going to be Gidon, yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
H-E-R.
H-E-R.
S-C-H.
S-C-H.
A-N-D-E-R.
A-N. Oh, Hirschender. D-E-R.
D-E-R.
Right. And we find, and one second, you did Army already?
I did what?
Sahal?
I did not do it yet.
No, no, so one second. Where did you go to college?
To Hawaii.
Ah, and you're in the SMICHA program?
I'm not.
And you're a YU grad, but you're here
now. YU grad, I'm here. I'm working at Torah Chicago a little bit, helping them with like Wildlife Madrid, I've been to street kind of stuff.
And where did you
go? Wuhan, the Bidam.
Okay, you're at Sipatali, Kain, at Kosholay Pivrit, at Amit Kadem.
Hey,
Manta. Hey, Manta, Kain, hello. You're making progress? Mit Kadem.
Oh, Kisat.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Maryland.
Maryland, I remember. What city?
Rockville, it's near Silver Spring.
It's near Silver Spring. Okay, Silver Spring, let me write, because... Okay. Okay, okay. So, Michael Miller, let me just... We're trying to work out a class list. I'll have to work.
Would they credit?
Absolutely.
Not only credit, you get Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll have a gift to give you soon. And I said to myself, if Michael doesn't come, I can't give it to Yitz. A gift that's worth
$30.
Yeah, plain and simple.
What did he do? What did he do to get the gift?
He appreciates who Billy Martin was. If I tell you Billy Martin, you don't even know what I'm... You don't even hear that, correct. All right, back here, please. Okay, so I want to say something. The Rebbe of Rabbi Yerobam is right. In this world in which we live, a man should have a good relationship with his wife. And if a person eats at home, he won't be hungry out on the street. I don't want to say another word. I trust you understand the depth of what I'm saying. So I want Rabbi Erlbaum to know, although I disagree with the concept that this is Pshat in the Gemara, but I love the thought that is derived from what his Rebbe said. Adkan, wait, I don't have your name. Are you in this class?
No.
You're an outsider? You're visiting?
Yes.
Welcome. Okay. I don't have to write it down. Let's move into the big leagues now. Then we continued with an unbelievable story. I'm now picking up again. Mishnah Halacha Chelek Hey Siman Yud. And the question was, if you buy tefillin and people tell you these tefillin belong to a great individual, for the sake of argument, Rabbi Aitman's family puts his tefillin up for sale. Do you have to have them checked? No, you're buying tefillin that a big Talmud Chacham wore. Giri, b'samach ande chazaka. The chaver, ain't chaver matzi, mitachet yado davar sheni mutukan, right or wrong? Chaver has a cheskat kashrut. So the story came up when I told the story to, I think I spoke with two or three grandsons over the Chag about the story. And they were shocked. Although one grandson had heard it, it seems the story is well known, that in the big machlokes between the Rabbi Ebeshep's camp and the Rabbi Emden camp, they accused Rev Yonatan Ebeshitz of being a Shabtaiist. You should know, without going into great detail now, that this machloket had a terrible impact upon the Jewish people. And ultimately, Avraham, it paved the way for the Haskalah, to conquer hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Jews, that machloket and the Cleves get machloket, 1766, it weakened the rabbinate. And people said, the rabbis are a bunch of phonies. And in this machloket, the story is told. Again, we have no picture. We can't be certain. But it's a very widely known story that the Emden people, the Rabbi Emden's people, found tefillin of Rabbi Yonatan Eberschutz. They opened them up, and there were no parshiot in the tefillin. And, wow, no parshiot in the tefillin. What kind of apikoros puts on tefillin that the batim are empty? And Rabbi Yonatan Eberschutz said that it has to do with Chalamayid, that, as you all know, there's a tremendous machloket. Do you put tefillin on Chol HaMoed? Don't you put tefillin on Chol HaMoed? It's a machloket we showing him, a basic machloket of how you view Chol HaMoed. I'm not going to all the details, but very simply, is Chol HaMoed a yontif with het ha-melacha, or is it a yom chol with a certain amount of kedusha because you bring a korban musaf? If it's a Yom Chol, then you have to put on tefillin. If it's a Yom Kadosh with a Chet Malacha, then you have the oath of Yontif, and you are not allowed to put on tefillin. It's like Shabbat, like Yontif. So Rabbi Yonatan Eberschutz felt you shouldn't put on tefillin, but since he davened in a shul where they put on tefillin, so not to be different, he put on tefillin without Pashiyot in them. No, this is quite a story. And this question comes to the Mishnah Halacha. So he's Melamed Zchut that even though this is a tremendous story and it would seem to indicate that you have to be Boidek Tefillin when you buy Tefillin from another Mugadol, but this is the ultimate exception to the rule. There's a story that happened with Rabbi Yonatan Eberschutz. You may very well reach the conclusion, even if you're Rabbi Yonatan Eberschutz, never ever put on tefillin that have no pashiyot in them. And it can be a mikshol harabim, lifnei iveloti tein mikshol. Why am I saying that, Moshe? Because the halacha is, if you come into shul and you don't have tefillin and you see a pair of tefillin, you're allowed to put them on. You don't need rishut. We go with the chazaka that 99% of b'nei Torah are very happy if someone does a mitzvah with their tefillin, with their talit. So imagine people are going to come in and put on these tefillin. I just the other day had I was davin shachris Thursday in Modi'in. Why was I in Modi'in? My family made a private minyan there. The shul where Rabbi David Lau, who's the chief rabbi, davins there. So his president and his unterfuhrer is my grandson's father-in-law. So we made an 8 o'clock minyan in the shul, because they have two minyanim, but they're earlier. And we all had to come in for the naming of a great-granddaughter for me. It was a big simcha. And one kid, a cousin, mitzad, a different part of the family, showed up and he forgot his tefillin. And he asked my grandson's father-in-law, the president of the shul, are there tefillin here? And he looked, he didn't see here, there, so he called the gabbai, and the gabbai told him where to find the community's tefillin that they give to anyone who walks in without tefillin, and within a minute he pulled out the tefillin. All right, there was a problem. The tefillin were for a right-handed person, and he's left-handed. So, Nu, do you know the Eitzah? How many of you have studied Derech HaShulchan? You have to turn it up inside the other way. You have to put it on backwards. That way the Kesher, Shelyad, is near the heart. So I told but my grandson's new from the army. Everyone once in a while gets caught up with the problem of a left-handed person with right-handed tefillin. So one grandson knew right away what to do. I was very impressed. So I discovered in the Derech HaShulchan. I thought I discovered America when I discovered in the Derech HaShulchan years ago. But it seems that Zilkre Beraf will poskim notice. So the kid put tefillin on. Nud, you check the tefillin. You take for granted there's a chazaka that the tefillin are there, the tefillin are good. Now, this leads to the whole question of fakers in the Jewish world. And the Mishnah Halachah alludes to it. To me, this is one of the saddest topics you can imagine. I'll give you two sources. Here, you talk about fakers. Beryl Wine. I don't know, a guy named Rakefet put out a scholarly memoir from Washington to Washington, and since that memoir came out, we've had a flood of memoirs. Rabbi Gold, from Williamsburg to Jerusalem, right or wrong. I told you Rabbi Kirschenbaum, Aaron Kirschenbaum, he put out, but it's private, he's not selling it, it's for family or friends. And now Beryl Wine put out a memoir, Teach Them Diligently. And I have to say, I enjoyed it. I wish he would have written more. It's too brief for me. But he tells stories. You shiver, you shake. Page 63 tells a story. He's now coming to Florida. This is Miami Beach. The shul, I believe later Rabbi Shapiro was there. A very important shul in Miami Beach. It's right in the heart of the Jewish area. And he's now coming from Chicago to Miami Beach. And before he left Chicago, I spent several weeks in the back of a kosher butcher shop owned by a former yeshiva classmate of mine in Chicago. So I had practical experience regarding the veining, it means trabering, of blood vessels and the removal of non-kosher fat in the forequarters of beef. Now that I was in Miami Beach, this knowledge was put to the test. From our local butcher shop, all the meat was to be imported from a well-known Hasidic wholesaler in Brooklyn. He would ship the meat to Miami completely kosher. So our butcher would only have to cut and package the final product. On one of my regular visits to the meat cooler, I noticed a number of forequarters that hadn't been deveined, and from which the non-kosher fat hadn't been removed. Since the meat had already been soaked and salted, there was no way to salvage it for the kosher market. I called the Brooklyn wholesaler and told him that somehow a mistake has been made. He answered me derisively, "I thought that you Litvaks don't care about such matters." I informed him that he would never again sell meat in Miami Beach to the hotels whose kosherit was certified by the OU, and certainly not to this butcher shop. I kept my promise as long as I was in Miami Beach. It was quite a lesson. Never be fooled by beards or long black coats when money is involved. Could you imagine? You're dealing here with Yisurim D'Oraita. You're dealing here with, this is not the Yankov Sheni Shogoyet you're dealing with here. And could you imagine? And I'll tell you, it's very, very frightening. And this is something that is so disheartening. But it once again proves the Rakefet axiom. It's very easy to be a chassid. It is very difficult to be a masonic. I need not elaborate. And one has to be careful. Where do you draw the line? Who can you depend upon? Here's a guy with beard payers. Big Rebbe Shahashkacha. And you should know, with the OU, I've said this so many times, there has never been a scandal from the tzad, from the department of the OU kashrut. Never. As far as their kashrut, it has been fabulous. The two scandals in the OU history have to deal with Jews in business, not with the kashrut, not with the rabbanim. There's never been a scandal. They have never had a scandal with the Gentile. Heinz gives kashgacha to the biggest companies in the world. There has never, I saw with my own eyes, from one of the biggest companies, the whole upper echelon came to be wined and dined at the OU in Manhattan by Rabbi Menachem Ganat. You should have seen the derech eretz these Gentiles had for the rabbanim of the OU. They had a whole dinner there, celebrate there, had been with the OU, I think, 25 years. And it's unbelievable. But with Jews, two Jews, remember Best Kosher, I think it was called, in Chicago? Remember the story I told it, I don't know if I told it this year, but it's well known. This non-Jewish teenage kid knocks on the rabbi's door, Rav Yom Kippur, and he says, Rabbi, I have something to tell you, I feel guilty. The owner, where you give hashgacha, the middle of the night, he sends me to another plant, and I transfer boxes back and forth, and I think something is not kosher here. Unknown to the OU, the owner of Best Kosher had a treif establishment, and he brought chickens in the middle of the night. This kid helped him deliver treif chickens, later sold with an OU label. The other one was with Rich. It's an unbelievable story. The vice president in charge of purchase in Rich was Jewish. And instead of buying the chemical sodium caseinate, which is parv and more expensive, he bought the milchika sodium caseinate, and all their parv products had milk in it. And it was found out, he was arrested, and he was facing trial, and his daughter got married, and boy, if there ever was hashgacha pratir, under the chuppah, b'pnei am v'eita, the man had a heart attack and died. Those were the only two scandals, but nothing to do with the rabbanim. The OU with the rabbi, someone checking on the rabbi, a rabbi on top of a rabbi, have a tremendous system in place. And here, look what Beryl Wine writes, and it frightens you. But listen to this. My friend and predecessor in Miami Beach, remember, Rabbi Beryl Wine is not coming from the YU world. He's coming from a world that's somewhere between the, what you call in popular language, the black world and the YU world, all right? What we would call here the Haredi world and the world of the Serugim. And he writes, my friend and predecessor, my Beach Rabbi Rotman, left his rabbinical position in Long Beach and moved to Jerusalem, there to found and head Yeshivat Mekas HaTorah in the Talpiot neighborhood. You all know Mekas HaTorah. Talpiot, right? Familiar with that? It's not a Kippah Sruga yeshiva. It's black overtones, but it's broad to a certain degree. His yeshiva was popular and successful mainly due to his holy character. And he goes on to describe Rabbi Rotman and the yeshiva. And an old hotel building had been bought for the yeshiva, and Rabbi Rotman was raising funds to refurbish and expand it. He formed an American charity, American Friends of Yeshivat Merkas HaTorah, and I became the treasurer and signatory on the bank account. As such, the bank that held the account was in Miami Beach. I deposited the American checks that Rabbi Rotman obtained on numerous fundraising forays in the United States. I also periodically gave him signed checks that he would convert into Israeli currency to pay the yeshiva staff. One day, I received a call from the bank manager. There were three checks, each for $100,000 drawn on the American Friends account. These checks had been cashed at an Israeli bank, which was now demanding that the American bank make good on them. Sick to my stomach, I called Rabbi Rotman in Jerusalem and pierced the story together, bit by bitter pit. It seems that a charlatan with a long black coat and a long beard had befriended Rabbi Rachman and offered to help him get good exchange rates for his American checks. The rabbi trusted him. And for 6 months, everything was in order. Then the thief came to Rabbi Rachman and asked for 3 blank checks because he could make a special deal that would profit the yeshiva. The rabbi naively complained. In cahoots with a crooked bank manager in Israel, the swindler had cashed the checks for $300,000. Desperately seeking guidance, I called Rabbi Krizworth. Rabbi Krizworth was Rabbi Wine's Rebbe and Rabbi Rachman's Rebbe. He was in Antwerp at the time, Rabbi Chaim Krizworth, Zichrono Livracha. He told me, the yeshiva belongs to Rabbi Rachman. Do whatever he wants. Despite threats of bodily harm by thugs in long black coats and beards, Rabbi Rachman went to the Israeli police with the story. The bank manager was finally arrested and confessed to the scam. He served time in prison, but his partner fled to America and established himself as a holy man in Borough Park. 35 years later, I met the thief at an engagement party in Muncie. I identified myself, reminded him of the incident, and told him that even though I could longer take legal actions against him, I would never forgive him. He showed no remorse. He blanched momentarily, but soon resumed his holy man persona, bestowing his blessings on all those foolish enough to ask for them. His ever-present cohort, meaning Gabbai, collected a fee from each one and piously proclaimed that the money would be used for charitable purposes. I need not tell you, it's shocking. Unfortunately, it is true. And having a long beard and payas and long clothes, not a guarantee of monetary honesty. And you all know what's going on today in our world, that there are rumors circulating that ritzuot for tefillin were made out of plastic for years now, sold on the market, and they plead with you, if you bought tefillin, I think it's within the last 2 or 3 years, have them checked that the ritzuot are of animal origin and not plastic. And this is so frightening to someone who believes, someone who has Yirat Shemayim. And this takes us back to a problem that is insoluble. It's right in the Pasha we just read, Yetzer Lev Hadam Ra Minu Rav. And some people, what they won't do for wine, women, and money, it's unbelievable. And you see, you can be religious. If you're not a Baal Tshuva, I've spoken about this at great length, and every Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur Drasha, every Rebbe will allude to it, B'makom Shebaal Tshuva made. A Baal Tshuva is sincere, he's real. He chose. But so many people are born into Yiddishkeit, just as you root for the Yankees, so you're a Satma Chassid, a Bhagava Chassid, a Belza Chassid, a Gera Chassid, a Vishnitsa Chassid. Chabad may be a little bit different because there's a tremendous drive within Chabad, as we'll see and talk about, but I'm sure in Chabad there's also a certain element that it just frightens me. The religion is just skin deep. It is not the heart, not the soul, not within. I'll tell you something that I never spoke about in public, but you can mention it now. Time is moving on. Let me get my knowledge out of my head, make it public. It's nothing disgraceful. Yitzchak, this was told to me by Tova. I'll just tell the story. You don't even have to analyze it. When the Kashrut scandal began in Boston, remember when they accused the Rav of all these terrible things, the early 40s? So it reached the ears of the Attorney General, Bushnell. I write about it, right? It's also in the movie, in the documentary. And you know, it's very funny with the documentary, because I asked someone in Boston to please go to the where they have the court records and get the exact first name of the judge, because everyone knows him as 8K. No one knows the exact first name. So this person who lives in Israel today, he's in his 90s, goes to the documentary center. I knew about this because my daughter is a lawyer. I once went to Los Angeles to get her some information. So I know in every big city, there's one center where all the records are. And this big Afro-American lady is sitting there. She's in charge of the documents. And he goes over and he mentions Rabbi Soloveitchik. Before he goes any further, she says to him, "Oh, you mean the Kashrut scandal?" She says, and she tells him exactly where these documents will be found. And he got the information for me. So when the investigation began, headed up by this judge, Abraham K. Cohn, a retired judge, a respected judge, the Rav would come home shocked that from Jews could lie. Tova told me this. He was shocked, you understand? Jews, from Jews, people in Kashrut, people in Sheikhtim, Rabbanim. They would appear before the committee and they would lie. He would come home shocked. And unfortunately, this is a reality. One more document that just is the most shocking. Shem Yirachim, what a person can become. I thank my student who was in the Kollel last year, Chaim Meiselman, sent me this. It's a whole story, how two guys lost God and found $40 million. And these are two Brooklyn boys who went to Mir Yeshiva High School. So they can't be, I don't know, Mir is Hasidic today or what. In my days, Mir was all non-Hasidic. And I owe my life to Mir, the Shanghai crowd. And these two kids went to Mir. And what became of these kids, what you read here, it is frightening. Forget about they made the money illegally, or semi-legally. They wind up, I still don't understand that, the whole scam. But okay, they wind up in Puerto Rico because they get tax breaks. They have a beautiful house on the beach in Puerto Rico. Live-in women who service them. One of them has two women. It's beyond words. They had a big party for all their help, and they celebrated by roasting a pig. God have mercy. All aspects of life. These the description of the boys. All aspects of life were governed by religious rules. Never eat meat and dairy together. No electricity on Saturdays. Tie the left shoe before the right. I don't know how you compare that, tying the left shoe before, oh, it's an open Gemara, but to compare that with Chol Shabbos, face it, Mish. High school meant Mir Yeshiva, an all-boys institution in the neighborhood. They give their names here, not important, and other potential future rabbis pored over religious texts in Hebrew and Aramaic, Four hours of each day in an unadorned auditorium full of wood desks evoking 19th century poverty. It's probably talking desks and standards. There was little instruction on math or English. Chaim was a good student, but as he got older, he started to feel as if adults cared more about the technicalities of religious laws than morals. He says he saw swindlers honored for their donations and fathers who could barely afford food buying pricey ceremonial artifacts to flaunt their piety. Chaim started breaking the rules. The first cheeseburger, he says, was, I'm leaving out the adjective here, awesome. God have mercy. But you see, this is a real problem. How do you honor swindlers? In my time, this question came up time and again. I relate to it in Revelation. They didn't have the problem of honoring swindlers. How do you honor Einstein? How do you honor Senator Lehman, who was Governor Lehman? Reformed Jews, Einstein, no practice. Lehman, president of Temple Emmanuel. But that's a small question. Look at the world today. Some guy in Bnei Brak or some guy in Borough Park makes $500 million, crooked as can be, slumlord to the 10th power, shenanigans to keep the law away, and then you give him ne'ilah to open the Aron Kodesh on Yom Kippur. No, look at these kids. Look what they're looking at. People who can't afford food. These kids were raised in poverty. They describe, the article describes the way they were raised. People who can't afford food, but they spend $100 on a lulav or the netbook. You understand? You can understand how a sensitive kid, all right, and then once he reaches the conclusion what we have in Israel with all the, in America with all the sex fiends, there's now another, I can't even keep track of it. It's beyond words. I told you in America, if anyone called me rabbi, I smacked their face, plain and simple. Title is a disgrace. It's either Rebbe or Aaron or Ani, whatever you wish, or Aaron, but not rabbi. It's a disgrace. That guy in Washington, D.C., a mixer? All right. So you see what the Mishnah Halacha is saying, yes, swindlers are a factor of life. And I can tell you a story that happened not in this very building, but when BMT was in Neely. I don't want to give names, there's a reason why. When BMT was in Neely, we had a wonderful Rebbe who taught as well, Rabbi Berzon, Hananya Berzon. So one of our students from the very early years of BMT became a sofer, and he was checking tefillin, and a lot of kids went to him, and I don't know, somehow too many tefillin came back pasul. So, I know whoever was checking that, I don't know, it was a whole group. So Rabbi Berzon pulled the shtick. I couldn't get over it. He was the son of a very prominent rabbi, Rabbi Bernard Berzon, Beryl Berzon. And he knew what the rabbinate is all about. And he went and he photographed the tefillin, the parshiot, before they gave them in. Photograph, okay? Today, you do it in a second, then it was a little bit more involved. But okay, you photograph, you print out the film, and lo and behold, the parshiyot come back. Sulat, someone played with them in the shop. You should know that a complaint was filed by the Eidah Haredit Beit Din who gave them hashkacha. There was a whole investigation, and they answered on their checking tefillin for one full year. All they could do was sell tefillin that others had checked. They could not do any checking for 1 year, and then they had to come back to the Beit Din, and the Beit Din would investigate them to see if they were really Balei Tshuva. I don't know if they made them take a neder al dat rabim, whatever it was, and then they let them go back into the business. But could you imagine taking parshiyot and doing something with a letter to invalidate it? And that way you have business to sell new parshiyot. So I have to say, this tshuva is very frightening because it's very real. And it leaves you, and if we live life today, unfortunately, it leaves you with a very frightening feeling. Whom can I trust? And that was the lecture I've given in America now in two different locations. I think it's on the YU website, the one I gave in Toronto or the one I also gave in Miami. How can we trust our rabbi? It is frightening, frightening. And again, it's easy to be a chassid, but it's very hard to be a musinik. Your whole life, your whole being has to be consumed by Torah. And I know people don't understand me. People come to me, can we buy your books? Can we buy this book, that book? I tell them, I don't touch money. Don't sell my books. I'll tell you where to buy them, you know, whatever I know. I don't touch money. Right or wrong? Could be. You can laugh at me. I had many years of poverty, the full sense of the word. You don't know what life was like in Israel after the Yom Kippur War. You don't know what life was like here under the Mapai, when it was a controlled economy and a tremendous black market, which I could not be part of. Not for halachic reasons. Forget about that. They went past the Baruch Lichtenstein. Can you go to the black market? By the way, that's what he's alluding to, barrel wine, that I can get you a better rate. That was when there was a black market. And you had to know who to go to, and they competed with rates. Today it's basically all the same. It's all out in the open. It's all legal. So they asked, when's Mr. Baralichmati, can you go to the black market? He said, I don't know, I'll be a lacha, but one thing I know, the government goes to the black market. That day, Pinchas Sapir was a big headline. Sapir had just converted a few $100 million for the government on the black market. So you understand, if the government goes, look into the Rambam, look into Gezele Valveda, or look into Rakefet's article on Din in the Malchut, the Din in Rakefet Aaron, I forget already if it's Chelik Aleph or Chelik Bet, but look in, you'll see what I'm talking about. But I had difficult years. My daughter once said, we knew people who went to jail and they all had money. You're here in Israel. A number of people. And my daughter once said to me, a little girl at the time, she said, Abba, why don't you go to jail? We'll have money. We'll be rich. She said, and boy, was there truth to what she was saying. But this is the Mishnah Halacha. But Halacha Lemaisa, what he says is basically we have to trust people. If we don't trust, we don't have Yiddishkeit. I would like to believe that out of the thousands upon thousands of students I have taught, the overwhelming majority are Yoreim v'Shleimim. That they're always going to be phonies and fakers and people who will give their souls for wine, women, and song. Yes, Leitzo Lev Hadam Ram Nurav. We can't change a pasuk in the Torah. This is why we have a Yetzer Hara and a Yetzer Tov. This is why we have Bechira. This is why there can be Schad Yonish. This is why there can be a Rosh Hashanah and a Seretz Yemei Tshuva and a Yom Kippur. But basically, we have to trust people. And he says, and that story that they tell about Rabbi Yonatan Nebshitz, that this is a rabbinic aphorism. Lav ma baravashi chatumala. That's the Gemara. Ma baravashi. What he signed off is the official text. It becomes a rabbinic aphorism that, you know, it's a story. It's anecdotal. Prove that it really happened. Arkadekartek could be a Russia who would self-push tefillin without parshia? Maybe the whole story is not true. But we have to go on living in a real world, and in a real world, if we don't have trust, we can't have a community, we can't have a kehillah. When a Jew comes in and you're looking for a minion and he says he's Jewish, we believe him. Obviously, if you have reason to doubt, you have to have seichel. And I'll end off by citing the halacha. You can all look it up. If you recall, Natan, we discussed it. Look into the Mishnah Brura. I don't want to say Arachayim because today the Mishnah Brura has conquered our world. That's the Arachayim today. I grew up in a world to the Rav. We were always shocked because we were kids. To us, the Mishnah Brura. But the Rav's attitude, the Mishnah Brura, was another Achron. You know, he didn't fall Koran for the Mishnah Brura the way we fell as students. And when the Rav would differ with the Mishnah Brura, I remember it was a little bit shocking for us at first. All right, later in life we learned that Rav Yosef Elio Henkin, the great-grandfather of the Karban Hashem Yikom Damo, the Rabbi Eitan Hashem Yikom Damo, and Eitan Henkin, that you all know that Rav Yosef Elio Henkin held the Aruch HaShulchan to be a better posek than the Mishnah Brura, and a dummy named Rakefet has given many shayurim explaining why. But let me quote the Mishnah Brura, but the chilu arechimu, hilchat tefillin, simin lamed tet, halacha tet. And look what the Mishnah Brura says, hamoche tefillin, fi oma shachayu shal adam gadol ne'eman. That when a person sells tefillin and he says, Rabbi so-and-so used these tefillin, you can believe him. The Mishnah Brura reads, Hu hadinim oma shalakach mi mumcha. You're outside the shtibble in Katamon. So outside the shtibble, they're all. If you ever saw the outside the shtibble, if you would remember what the shtibble was like in 69 and what it's like today, it's unbelievable. In 69, there was barely a minion in the shtibble. In Katamon, the shtibble that I daven in many times in the afternoon when I visit my daughter. So you're outside the shtibble, Erev Shabbos, Thursday already all types of cheeses and all types of wines, and Friday all types of challahs, everything being sold. So they also have at times, you'll see they're selling tefillin, and they're set, and they're being boidei tefillin, and tzitzit. No, how do you know who the guy is? He looks elit, he has a beard, he has payas, he can have long clothes, he can have a kippah shrugah. He looks elit, and he'll tell you it comes from a mumcher. You can believe him. It's like telling you that it comes from an Adam Gadol. And then the Mishnah Brura explains why. The Eid Echad Neman Bi Isurim. Because you all know, you've learned your Adeya. If I walk into this room and there's a piece of meat on the table and I ask Gidi, is it kosher? And he says it's kosher, then I believe him 100%. Avraham, Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi Isurim, this is a basic klal. But nevertheless, the Chatav HaMagen Avram, this Ruler is quoting the Magen Avram, Dal Kovan Be'inim, Shamakirin Oto, Shehu Muchzak B'Kashrat. You have to be sure this person is the kosher person, has the Cheskat Kashrat. How can you be sure? All right, this is the old story. People come to me for letters that they're from, that they're Shomer Shabbos. I'll give a letter. I mean, I see they come to shul, they're Shomer Shabbos. My daughter, many, many years ago, saw an advertisement, if you have a bachelor's and I don't learn a Daf Gemara, and you are observant, we're beginning a new program. Never before, women should be able to be rabbinic pleaders, to not Rabbanim in the Batei Dinim. And my daughter had to get two letters from two Rabbanim that she was a Yirat Shemayim, a Shemeret Dat, Kedin, V'Kedat. One of the letters I got from Yeshua Hutna, I think after a letter from him, you don't need, he knew my children well, we were neighbors. So I don't think she needed another letter, but you got to know. But then the Mishnah Brura says, if the person put on those tefillin, you can believe that they're kosher. That to see a Jew with beard and payas and a big kippah shrugah on his head, and he's putting on these tefillin, and he's putting on this talis, and he's using this abakamphis, and he tells you it's kosher, you can believe him that it is kosher. So that's what the Mishnah Halacha, Paskins LaHalacha. But it's a very sad tshuva, because the fear here, unfortunately, is very real, and what people won't do for money. And you all know there was that yeshiva, who I think it was in Montreal, who found $90,000 in a cab, and he returned it, and there was no identity, the police, and then this woman, the family that lost it, and he was lauded all over. That yeshiva boy, I would trust to buy talit and tefillin from him, 100%. The Yibu Kamuto B'Yisrael. Or the story I tell about myself. That one time during the 70s, I came out of the mikveh, and I found a wad of dollar bills. I think it added up to $35. Oh, I felt like a millionaire. What I did to try to return that money, I put signs up. I went back to the mikveh. I put up, oh my gosh. And the person running the mikveh laughed at me. He said, no one's going to claim it. It must be some American who went to mikveh. He's not going to come back. And I felt so bad. I felt, why did I find this money? Yes, now follow me. I would have been better off had I not found it. I went out of my mind to try to return it. I always feel bad. People, you know, you find money. I say, imagine how the person feels who lost it. But what can you do? If you find it and you make the effort to return it, and it can't be returned, all right, you're allowed to keep it. But that yeshiva boy, kol hakavod. Okay, ad kan, the simple question about can we trust tefillin if we buy a pair that someone important wore before me? Let me go a step further. Mishnah Halacha, Chelik Tetvav, Siman Tet. I come to Borough Park for about 20 years. I rented an apartment in Borough Park every summer. I lost the apartment 2 years ago because people come into the house full time and it's no longer up for rent. All right? That's life. We relocated this summer, finally, in Kew Gardens Hills, and it was fine. The Kavadal of Tiferet, they're also Jews in Kew Gardens Hills. But when I came to Borough Park, there are many shtiblach there, and the balabas told me where he davens two blocks away. Says, nice shtibl. And I davened there for 20 years. I actually felt a part of that shtibl. I had big yichus in the shtibl. Number one, I was the only one davening there who didn't have a beard. And number two, I was the only one who yet knew Reb Moshe Big and spoke and learning with him, Nachlat Moshe, for whom the shtibl is named. His grandson is the Rebbe. So I had a double yichus there. Fine. When I first started davening there, I couldn't understand what was happening. In the middle of Chazaret Hashatz, many people are taking off their tefillin and they're putting on new tefillin. And then it dawned upon me, these are chassidim, makpid to put on Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Can you put them on together? And that's a very interesting question. Meikar Hadin, according to Meikar Hadin, why not? Chazal already saying, Mokum Yesh Barosh Laniach Shnei Zugot. Who says you have to put Lachatchila?
Benishchai.
So you should know that I was a Shabbos in Staten Island about 30 years ago. I just met with these people whose home I was in. I brought them an Aliyah many, many years ago, and they took us out, Chol HaMoed Sukkos. We said that it was the afternoon. I was shocked. Listen to this little story. So this my wife loves the yogurt. We're going to meet at the ice cream yogurt place on Rehov Keren Kayemet. This is a frum area. Sharei Chesed. No cars can go there Shabbos. What do you want? No sukkah. Could you imagine that they make you? I'm makpid Baruch Hashem. I have a sukkah right outside my door. I don't eat anything outside the sukkah. Okay? Banish Shalom, you don't have to be a big tzaddik to understand what a mataner it is. Having grown up in the Bronx, when I had to be moisa nefesh to eat a piece of bread and a sukkah in the shul, that here I have a sukkah right outside my living room door. I walk out, and there I am, in a sukkah built by my grandchildren in 20 minutes, and a sukkah that cannot be blown away today, although I'm on the 10th floor, because in the army, when they captured a terrorist, they tied his hands with that plastic new invention, and they now sell it to tie the schach down, the sukkah down. It can't be makabel tumah. It's fabulous. So Baruch Hashem, what I used to suffer, how do I keep a sukkah standing? The wind shouldn't blow it down. And today, simple as eating apple pie, or in Israel, a nice good pizza or falafel. So I'm in Staten Island, and a guy is from Tveria, a Sephardic guy raising money, I hope not into his pocket for a good cause, but very suspect, all these people who travel over the world from Israel, schnurring in all the communities. So my host gave him a nice check. I said, do you trust him? He says, no, I don't trust him. I don't trust anyone from Israel, he said, but I'm giving him the check. Because it's a sight to see someone davening with two pairs of tefillin on at the same time. And he was right. Two shel rosh, two shel yad. What a sight. Okay. Now as a Litvak, I got very upset at first. I'm a Litvak. I know the Shulchan Aruch. What is the Shulchan Aruch paskin? Only a tzaddik. Only someone who's very pious. Only he has the right. What are we going to worry about? Machlokot? We pass him with Rashi. Say the HaPashiach, right or wrong? The Vilna Gaon said very sharply, a good Litvak, if we're going to worry about all the Machlokot in relation to Tefillin, putting on two pairs is by far not enough. I think the Vilna Gaon wound up how many with 24 pairs or what? How many has 64? Kol HaMaber, HaRezer Meshubach. You follow? So the Vilna Gaon, and here these young pipsquirts, kids, who the heck are they? With all the respect to Gidi and Rafi. You guys are tzaddikim, you guys are chassidim, you guys are putting on two pairs of tefillin. Donnie, you put on two pairs of tefillin? No, you're not there yet, all right? Natan, I should say. Donnie, I'm sorry, it's the first cone I taught in Israel. Natan, you don't put on two pairs yet. Alex, what about you? Two pairs, Baruch Hashem, Chabad, all right, I can't say a bad word. Alex is over 30, he can do what he wants already. He's smarter than the Rebbe, and he can...
Baruch Eliyahu and the Rebbe said that everyone in Bar Mitzvah should put on.
I know, what are you telling me that I don't know? And I got frightened. Then I made my peace with it, Baruch Hashem, these are Chassidim, I'm a Litvak, I'm coming from where? Coming from another. No, what's the difference? The Seder HaParshiyot, right? We have one side of them, another. I know you don't have to go. You all know what I'm talking about. Fine. The way the tefillin is sewn, the hairs that are in the tefillin, there are quite a few little differences with all the poskim. And then there's another sheet, of course, this the Gaon was afraid of, because if you have to retie the knot every day, Rabbi Eliyahu's viewpoint, it seems. No, do we know how to retie the knot? Everyone would have to become a sofistam. So, all right, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, this is the Sfardim, they see it al-Pi Kabbalah, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, Dinei Rachamim, Midat HaRachamim, Midat HaDin, you can come into a whole world that is beyond us. Gentlemen, and I'll end off with this question, I have freebies to give out, and a little announcement to make. Gentlemen, what about if Alex got mixed up? And lo and behold, he puts on and davens and lends his tefillin to Yomo. And Yitzchak, the Shel Yadis Rashi, and the Shel Rosh is Rabbeinu Tam? Are you Yotzei? And Yomo certainly wouldn't be Yotzei. Because if Rashi is right, Rabbeinu Tam is not Tfilin. If Rabbeinu Tam is right, Rashi is not Tfilin. But Alex put on both pairs, except they were inverted. It was the odd couple, each pair. Are you Yotzei? Could you believe this question? And you'll see what he deals with, and you'll see what he says at the end. I tell you, gentlemen, this class is not for a beginner, but someone who has learned Shas and Paiskim and wants to enjoy and see a new world, you cannot believe how much there is in the Mishnah Halacha. It's a simple question. But what a question! And he's asked. He doesn't say who asks it. He gives us a date. This tshuva was written in 1996. And what a question. And you'll see what he answers, but you'll see at the end, there's one paragraph, an addendum. It captivates you. Minig Yisrael. Gentlemen, to reiterate, so far we made some comments on the press conference. That's it. Let the press conference run away. Torah has to go on. Eitz Tzarei Liyakov. We need a big Yeshua. We need a lot of leadership. No one has an easy solution to what we're going through. I've been through it before, and my, I've been in the thick of it. And one of my grandsons, they called him out of basic training to be in my at Santana paratrooper, my fourth paratrooper in the family, and. These kids are no longer in basic. They're down in Aza. They're getting training on the job, as they say. You follow? And they just called up 12, 13 reserve units from the Magavnikim, the Mishmar HaGvul. So you can imagine how many lives are being disrupted. But these are rough policemen. These are not the average policemen, the Magavnikim. You know how they came to be. The UM summer Gruzim. They're the best. The Magavnikim came to be when the UN voted partition for Jerusalem. You were not allowed to bring in more than, I think, 200 policemen to Jerusalem, 1948-49. So Israel, you weren't allowed to bring more than 200 soldiers. So Israel came up with a division of the police, Mishmar HaGvul. They technically are policemen, not army. So they never had the limits. These are policemen. What does the UN want? There was once an incident where Jordan complained to the UN that Israel is moving an endless military convoy up to Jerusalem. Do you remember this? The early 50s. The UN investigated. The Belzer Rebbe, Rabbi Arla, was coming to Yerushalayim for Shabbos. That was the convoy. 200 cars, and who knew there were that many cars in Israel at the time, were escorting Rabbi Arla of Belz to Yerushalayim. So what do we talk about today? The press conference, going to mikveh every day, the correspondence, the reasons, the Torah, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the Baal Tanya. Then we went in to tefillin. Can you trust someone when he says these tefillin belong to this rabbi, to that rabbi? I got them from this wonderful Sefer Munche. Can you trust him? Reb Yaakov Emden, the story. What a tshuva. The sideshow, which breaks my heart, Beryl Wine in his autobiography, and what Chaim Meiselman sent me, I can't even read it to you. I had to censor it. What menufalim graduates of Mir High School. I'm not criticizing Mir, it could happen anywhere. But wow, to roast a pig is beyond my comprehension. Ad kedei kach. No vestige of the blood in their veins. And then we just introduced a few words, the next hill we will climb, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin, when they get mixed up. Now I have to make it clear to you. Tomorrow's Shayur. Number one, you go to mikveh before the class. Number two, it's $36,000 linked to the shekel to the IOU list. It does not go for nothing. Tomorrow's share represents the best I can do with the Rav and the Rebbe. And when it's over, you will understand Chabad and what they're all about in this world and the next world. Now, I don't want Giddy to be frightened. The IOU list is based upon the Gemara. Ashid the Muggin, Maiden Muggin, Shafya. When a doctor heals for nothing, he's worth nothing. If I give tomorrow's shear for nothing, you're going to walk out thinking it's worth. Well, you've got to pay $36,000. Wow. It's a different feeling. But I don't take any money from my students. So it goes on to the IOU list. Vic keeps the IOU list. When Pesach comes, I burn it with the chametz. Got the message? Okay. Now, before we daven Maariv, a few freebies. If anyone wants a calendar, these are extra calendars that have come my way. They're all beautiful. Number two, we spoke about the prenuptial agreement. Yitzchak, this is for you. This is an article by a big Talmud Chacham, Rav Shalom Dov Be'er Levine of the Chabad Library, against the prenuptial, but you'll see, he realizes that the evidence should be good. I still hold that a prenuptial is very important, and we can summach on the Rambam, Rav Shalom Dov Be'er Levine.
Where is it published?
I don't know.
Online, or?
I don't know. You look at it. That's Yitzchak to bring it to you in due course. Riverdale Synagogue appoints second woman as rabbah. Okay? I don't know if they have two rabbis, but they have two rabbah now. This is the article from the New York Times. American Catholics approve of Pope's direction. This is an unbelievable article on the stupid rabbi here who reject the conversion. Later they accepted it after the whole world cried out. But the conversion was done by one of the most famous Chabad Shluchim, Rabbi Moshe Feller. What's very fascinating about this article is everyone knows Rabbi Moshe Feller for one simple reason. When he was a young man in Minneapolis, he brought Sandy Koufax tefillin and gave him a gift when Koufax refused to play on Yom Kippur. It's in the article as well. And finally, there's a person who works for YU, I believe, Judah Harris, the photographer. He's put out books. He did a beautiful picture of an etrog, and he's making it into a poster. He's selling it if anyone wants a poster for their sukkah, but it's very beautiful. He's got tremendous artistic ability. Gentlemen, with that, I want to wish everyone health, happiness, a good year that is coming, and a good chaydish. And tomorrow at 9:05, we totally change gears. And I need Modela Kaddish Baruch Hu that I understand what I'll be talking about. It took 70 years of learning to be able to comprehend the Rav and the Rebbe. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vadanya. Michael, you want to say Bahu Rachum, please? There are plenty of. Is there a Chiyuv here? Okay.